We're doing in Yaakov on Gemara Shabbos. We're up to the 11th chapter. If someone wants to follow inside, follow. You could look on with them. Why don't you get together and look together? Somewhere. Why don't you guys just sit together? By the time you find it, let's learn. So, Tanu Rabbanan is an intro to a Braita, to a Tanaic quote that was left out of the Mishnah, and was gone through by the Academy of either Rav Chiya or Rav Oshaya, and they validated it, that it was a valid Braita, it was a good quote. Tanu Rabbanan, Mikosheish. The Torah tells us a story. Vayuvne Yisrael b'midbar, vayimtzu ish mekoshesh eitzim b'yom haShabbat. You guys familiar with this story? Where did we see this story? Vayimtzu ish mekoshesh eitzim b'yom haShabbat. Where?
No. Let's see.
It's not far. That we know it's
here. Ah. So. Last week's parsha. The Jews were in the desert and they found a man who was mekoshesh eitzim, and they found him on Shabbat. What is mekoshesh eitzim? I guess by oases there were trees. So, what's the story here? So, the Medrash says vayimtzu. They found him because they were looking for him. Why were they looking for him? Because after the Jews got a decree that they would be in the desert for 40 years, there was a downturn. People felt uninspired, and there was this danger that people might desecrate Shabbos. They wouldn't feel so connected to the mitzvot. So Moshe set up men to go outside and ensure that Shabbos is being kept, enforce the Shabbos. Well, if you see policemen walking up and down the street, then hopefully you don't have to do it by force.
God just said you're stuck here for 40 years, you're going to drop dead in this desert, you're never going to see what you're being Jewish for.
Oh, wait, that you added one sentence that's not true. You're never going to see what you're being Jewish for every day that a person's being Jewish.
I don't mean that way. I mean, the whole essence of Judaism is also to have the country.
No, it's an important part. It's not the whole essence of Judaism. Okay, so all the Jews for the last 2,000 years that couldn't make it here? So their lives were worthless?
Not worthless.
Okay.
But they got a decree that they're stuck in the desert, they won't see the land. So they should now be inspired still.
And the last 2,000 years that Jews did not get to see the land? What's the difference?
It was taken away from them immediately.
What's the difference?
I got a technical question.
Yeah.
I mean, just if this is tlachad.
I didn't yet say it was tlachad.
Because we had a midrash about that after Har Sinai, everybody slept with their wives and had boys.
Okay.
Tlachad did not.
Okay. It's a good question. So I guess when it says everybody, it doesn't always mean everybody.
There's a difference because the whole purpose of being brought out of Egypt was to be then being told, they're being briefed all day, all the time. Like they know we're going to this destination. This is where
Let's see, what does it say? Votzeiti etchem, veitzalti etchem, megalti etchem, velakachti etchem li la'am, vayiti lachem leilokim. There are conditions. And then veiviti etchem, I will bring you. So when they decided they're not going with Hashem, and they threw rocks at the Shekhinah, when they said, Nitana Rosh, let's appoint an idol, Venashuva Mitzrayim. So,
all men of the ages, I forget to above,
they panicked. How many? It certainly sounds like there was a large number, right?
Every single one of them.
That's a good question. It's a very good question. It sounds like there was definitely a big majority. Coming back to our parasha. So, there was a man who went out, and it doesn't say what he did. It says he was mekoshei sheitzim. Now, mekoshei sheitzim could mean that he was cutting up trees. Mekoshei sheitzim could mean that he was gathering trees. And it could mean he was doing something else, and his livelihood was he was a mekoshei sheitzim. They found the man, and he was a man whose job was he was the mekoshei sheitzim. And they found him on Shabbos doing something, transgressing Shabbos. And one opinion says that he did it on purpose. They stood there and they warned him. They said, we see you, and if you continue doing it, you'll get the death penalty, right? No one can get the death penalty unless they were forewarned. So obviously the Mikoshesh was forewarned. So why would anyone in their right mind keep doing something on Shabbat when two witnesses are standing there and they're telling him, we see you? It says in the Torah that a person who does this on Shabbat will get the death penalty. If you continue, we will be witnesses and you will get the death penalty. And he continues. So one opinion says he did it. He said, let me get executed, and this way it will ensure that no one else will transgress Shabbat. So the Braita begins, Mekoshesh ze tzelofchad. In last week's Parsha, when we learned the Parsha, we skipped over this. We didn't spend time on this. The Mekoshesh was actually tzelofchad. We know that at the end of the book of Bamidbar, a bunch of girls, young ladies, pious young ladies will come up to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, our father died in the desert and he wasn't one of the people who sinned in Korach against you. And now he only had girls. We want his inheritance. If there are no boys to keep up his name, we should get his inheritance. So their father's name was Tzilafchon. And the bright over here is saying that the Mekoshesh was none other than Tzilafchon. You see, the Pasuk describes, Vayuvnei Yisrael Bamidbar, the Jews were in the desert, and they found the man, Mekoshei Shitzim. And then you move forward in the book of Bamidbar, and their description of his death is, Avinu Met Bamidbar, our father died in the desert. Well, obviously, everyone died in the desert. What are they saying? Ah, they're saying, our father is the one about whom it says, Bamidbar. Malealan, just like the story of Mekoshesh begins with the Jews were Bamidbar, so Tzlavchad, Afkan Tzlavchad, so you see when it says Bamidbar, it's talking about Tzlavchad, so over there too. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, this is Rabbi Akiva's opinion, that the Torah covered up his name, but by telling us that Tzlavchad died Bamidbar, the Torah was revealing that he was the one who was Bamidbar, he was the one breaking up or harvesting the trees. Amar Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says to Rabbi Akiva, he says, Akiva, ben kach u ben kach ata atid liten et adin. Whether you're right or wrong, you're going to pay for what you just said. Im ki dvarecha, if you're right, hatorah kisatu. You see, the Torah covered it up. The Torah doesn't reveal to us what Slavcha did. The Torah doesn't tell us who was the man, Mekoshei Sheitzim, v'tam gole oto, and you're uncovering it. Why are you doing that, Akiva? And if you're wrong, so then why are you giving a bad name to that tzaddik, to Tzlavchad, and saying that he was the Mikoshesh? So that's what Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira answers him. So the Gemara says, what do you want from him? Rabbi Akiva had a tradition of Gzereshava. Gzereshava is when you have two words, and you have a tradition that these two words teach about one another. So that's something he had on tradition. What did Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira want from him? Answers the Gemara, Gzeira Shava lo gamir. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira did not have that tradition. So that's why he said to Rabbi Akiva, if you want to interpret it this way, you have no right. Rabbi Akiva had the tradition, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira didn't. So Tosas asks the obvious question. Tosas says, if Rabbi Akiva had a tradition, then why didn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira just accept and learn from Rabbi Akiva that tradition? What's he attacking him for and saying, Rabbi Akiva, you have no right. If you're right, then you shouldn't have said it. And if you're wrong, then you're just giving him a bad name. Well, one second. Rabbi Akiva had a tradition. So why didn't Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira just learn that tradition from him? So Tosa says a big, big chidush. Tosa says something, I don't know of another Tosa that says this line. Tosa says, from Rabbeinu Tam, that when they had a tradition of which words were aligned in the Torah to learn a Gzera Shava, very often we have two words, And we say over here this word means one thing, and you have the same word somewhere else, it has to mean the same thing. So you can't say that about every word, but there are certain words which we say it about. So Rabbeinu Tam says they had a tradition, an exact number of Gzeirah Shavah in the whole Torah. It wasn't a free-for-all. They had a tradition, how many? And Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira had his quota. He said, I have a tradition. Let's say they had a tradition, there were 48 Gzeirah Shavah in the Torah. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says, I have a tradition, what are the 48? And this isn't one of them. And I'm not accepting your tradition. So he wouldn't learn it from Rabbi Akiva. It wasn't that Rabbi Akiva could walk in and say, I have a tradition, now why don't you learn it from me? You know, Bini over here is Yemenite. The Yemenites still eat grasshoppers. If they're kosherite, the Torah describes kosher grasshoppers. Us Ashkenazim, we don't know what are kosher grasshoppers. So what happens if Bini comes to town and says, let me teach you, this is the chargol, this is the chagav, this is the sol'am. I'll tell you and I'll show you what are the defining characteristics of each grasshopper, and now you can eat them. Yummy, French fries for dinner. So in certain areas we say, Benny will teach me his tradition. How did Jews start eating turkey? So one opinion says that Jews came and said, we have a tradition on this bird. So the Ashkenazim said, okay, we don't, but if another Jew of another community tells me they have a tradition, this bird is kosher, so they started eating it. Years later, it turned out that it's not so clear that the original community had a tradition that was acceptable by Ashkenazi Jews, but nonetheless, the turkey's proven itself that it's a kosher bird. Coming back to our story, so according to Tosfos, although Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira would trust Rabbi Akiva, but he wouldn't accept this because he had his tradition on the Gzeirah Shavah. Okay, you're saying Tosfos answers a lot of questions.
How do they have authority? Who gives them authority? I'm going to not listen to this guy.
But he had a tradition. He was
not listen to that Gzeirah Shavah. He had a tradition.
That's what Tosfos is saying. He had a tradition. I'm making up a number. Tosfos doesn't say what the number is. He's saying it could be that they had a tradition also of a number, a quota of Gzeirah Shavah. So if Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira filled his quota, so he said, I can't accept another Gzeirah Shavah. My tradition is fills the quota and it doesn't leave room for yours. Rashi over here adds another interesting point. Rashi says, if you have a Gzeirah Shavah, it's as though the Torah wrote it, spelled it out. Meaning we would think, even if you have a Gzeirah Shavah, it's not spelled out, you don't know. The Brisker Rav said that when you have a law of derivation, it's not the same as if it were written overtly in the Pasuk. There are things that are written overtly, then there are things that are derived. Rashi over here doesn't say it's the same, but he says it's like the same. If you have a Gzeirah Shavah, that's very interesting. You know, when we read the Pasuk, we don't read the Pasuk that way. Our father died in the desert. So Rashi says, it's as though it says, our father died in the desert in the story a few weeks ago in the Mikoshesh. So how are we to understand that, Rashi? So it says that when Rav would learn Chumash, every word he would read in the Torah, he would say the derivation on. And that's how Moshe Rabbeinu used to teach Chumash. So that's the way they would read Chumash, with the laws of derivation. So it was as though it was written. Okay, we move forward. Yeah. Bereshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz. Bereshit, for the Jewish people who are called Reshit, bara Elokim, Hashem created with an utterance, the first matter which would evolve into everything else. Elokim, Hashem initially thought to create the world with exacting justice and then said the world needs my mercy. Et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz, Hashem created the heaven and all of its derivatives and the earth and all of its derivatives. You read a pasuk and you apply derivations. Ve'ila mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem. And these, not only what I said earlier, but these as well are the laws that are derivatives of the Ten Commandments in the previous parasha. asher tasim, that you should place in an organized fashion that everyone can understand. Give them the reasoning behind the laws. Lifnehem, before Jewish judges, don't take your case to a non-Jewish court. So when you read the pasuk, you could incorporate the derivations. I just added derivations that Chazal say on each word in each of those pasukim. So it says that, well, Rashi does it to a degree. Rashi's goal is to explain pshat. Rav compiled a work called Safra Debe Rav, in which he does that. On every word in the pasuk, he tells you the derivation. So we have it today, yeah. So coming back to here, so it could be that's what Rashi is saying. It's as though it's written overtly. That's how you read Chumash. So according to Rabbi Yudim and Betera, where did Slavcha die? Answers the Gemara, Mivaya Piluhava. Slavcha was one of the people in last week's parsha who forced his way up after the spies came back and the Jews were told, don't go up. So then there was a group that said, we're going. Now we're going to Israel. We'll risk our lives. And Moshe said, it's over. You can't go. And they said, no, we're going anyways. So that's where Slavcha died. A similar story you have. It says, Vayicharaf Hashem bam vayelach. Miriam and Aaron, 2 weeks ago, Parsha, the end of Baal Oscha, Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moshe. Hashem calls them out of the camp. Hashem expresses his anger and leaves. And what does it say? Vayicharaf Hashem bam. Hashem expressed his anger against them. Milamed, this teaches us, Sha'af Aaron nitztara, that Aaron also became white. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion, that not only Miriam got tzaras, but also Aaron. Amar Rabbi Yudim ben Beteira, Rabbi Yudim ben Beteira fires back, Akiva ben kach u ben kach tatid liten et adin. One way or another, you're going to pay for what you just said. Im ki divrecha Torah kisatu v'atam gale oto. If you're right, you see the Torah didn't write it, the Torah didn't spell it out, why are you revealing it? Ve'im lav, and if you're wrong, so you're just spreading out a bad name about that tzaddik. The Gemara says, what Rabbi Yudah ben Betera want? Rabbi Akiva proved it. It says Hashem was angry at them. And says the Gemara, Ahu ben zifa be'alma. It means Hashem expressed his dissatisfaction with them, but not that Aaron also turned white. The Gemara says, Tanya k'manda marav Aaron nitztara. There is such an opinion in the Braita, that Aaron also got tzaras. It says in the Pasuk, Vayifen Aaron el Miriam v'nei mitzorat. Aaron turned to Miriam, and she was white. Tana, so the Braita says, Shepana mitzarato. When he turned to Miriam, and his mere turning was, he turned, it's not describing the physical movement that Aaron did, but rather it's telling you, He shifted from being with Tzarat. He shifted from having that whiteness. So here again we have two opinions whether Aaron also got Tzarat and was cured. So why was Aaron cured and not Miriam? Because she was more active in the conversation. She initiated it. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish teaches us a very important rule. HaChoshed b'chsherim lokeh v'gufo. If someone suspects someone else of doing something wrong, and that person really is kosher, they did nothing wrong, they will get punished with bodily pain or bodily harm. This is a rule we have, and we learn it from Moshe. When Hashem tells Moshe, go tell the Jewish people I sent you to take them out of Egypt, what does Moshe say? The Jews won't believe me. And Hashem said they would believe him. Hashem told him they would. Amar, so Hashem says to Moshe, they will believe, and they're the sons of believers. But you will see that you ultimately won't believe. You'll see the verse says, the nation believed him. They're descendants of believers, because it says Avram Avinu also ha'amin b'Hashem. But you won't, as the Pasuk says, Yan lo emantem bi. So how do we know Moshe got hit? Because it says, Hashem tells him, stick your hand into your shirt, and his hand turned white. So when Moshe asked for a sign, he was pained. So now we have to explain a little bit what's going on here. We know we have double letters in the Hebrew alphabet, right? What are the double letters? You have a chaf, and you have a chaf that's at the end of the word. you have a mem, right? And a mem at the end of the word. Nun, tzadi, pei. Very good. Menatzpach. Those are the letters that double up. That when they show up at the end of the world, what? Bet and vet are no. They're just like gimel and jimel and dalet and dalet. Well, there's a difference between a gimel with a dot inside and without. But he should be doing that. Us Ashkenazim, we lost that.
A rimel and a gimel.
A rimel and a gimel, you see. Jophon. Okay. So in ancient Hebrew, there was a difference in pronunciation between a gimel with a dot and without, a dalet with a dot and without, the, right? The th. The English th is the dalet, echad, right? The ancient, the Yemenite pronunciation is probably the way most people pronounced it once upon a time. It seems closer to the source. Ours is kosher and theirs is kosher, but there are certainly areas where theirs seems closer to the source. So so also the bays and the vays, and the kuf and the guf. On a kuf, there's also a difference whether it has a dagesh or not. So coming back to our point here. When Yosef was passing away, at the end of Bereshis, so the last psukim tell us that Yosef gathered the Jewish people, and he said, "Pakod yifkod Elohim etchem mizeh, Hashem will redeem you from this. You're going to get out of here." And our sages say that he gave them a tradition, or the leaders he gave a tradition, that when the time comes to leave, the true redeemer would come and say the word pakod. He would use the letter pei. And that's the idea that first exile corresponds to the letter pei. The double letters, each letter corresponds to a different exile. So that exile revolves around the letter pei. Paro, Pesach.
I'm talking about the three Galiot.
Okay.
The four Galiot is in Bado Yavan. I don't. Because there are five or six Galiot that are Mem, Nun, Pei, Tzadik.
There are five. Okay. Coming back to...
Wait, so which one's the fifth one?
If you wish, we'll look in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer and see the breakdown. I don't remember. So Yosef left them a tradition, Pakod Pakadti. 180 years pass from when Yosef gives them this tradition. And a man named Nun arises. He is a descendant of Yosef's. And he comes in and says, let's leave. The 400 years are up. And he leads the tribe of Ephraim. And they are slaughtered. They are killed. And the redemption is a fake. And then Moshe Rabbeinu is sent. And Hashem tells him, go to the elders and tell them, Pakod Pakanti. Hashem gives them the code. Use these words. And that's why when Nun came and said, I'm here to redeem you, so the elders asked Serach Bat Asher, there was an old lady still alive from Yosef's time, her name was Serach, and she said, what did Nun say? So they told her what he said. She said, no, he's a fake. So the Jews didn't go with him. Now when Moshe came, so the elders took his quote, Pakot Pakati, and they went to her, and she said, well, if those are the words he said, he's for real. He's legit. So Hashem gave Moshe a code with which the Jews were supposed to believe him. And they would, because they had a tradition that the true Redeemer would come with these words. Now, the masses didn't know this tradition. The leaders knew it. Serach Bat Asher knew it. And so when Moshe showed up, even the elders didn't know the tradition. They took his quote to Serach, and she approved him. Now Moshe says, but they won't believe me. Why'd you say that? Hashem said they would. So Hashem says, what?
Just really humble.
So Hashem says, it's not about you. It's about the Jewish people. You think they're going to doubt the tradition they had. And so Hashem says, corresponding to the three Avot, three patriarchs, you're going to have three signs that also correspond to what you just did wrong. And the first one is he sticks his hand into his shirt and his hand turns white, and Moshe is in very big pain because his hand becomes with tzaras. And so Moshe Rabbeinu is being told, you suspected the Jews that they wouldn't trust their tradition, so hachoshed b'ksherim, from here we learn the concept, he who suspects people who are kosher, loke b'gufo, they can expect to suffer bodily pain. The second thing is, he throws his staff, and the staff turns into a snake, and he runs away. So that's the second sign. You just did like the snake. You spoke Lashon Hara. And finally, the third sign is, take the water and spill it out on the land, and it will turn to blood. And that corresponds to the idea that you ultimately, Moshe, you will pay with water. When it comes time to speak to the rock, you will see that revolving around water, that's where your ultimate downfall will be. So Moshe Rabbeinu suspected them, and Hashem tells him, they're okay, but you won't be okay. Yan lo emantem bi, I will ultimately find you lacking in your emunah. And this concept appears in many places. So let's see a few places in Shas where this shows up. One place it shows up is in Tractate Yuma. So it says in the Mishnah, in the period of the Second Temple, there were Sadducees. Tzedukim, these people didn't believe our tradition. They said, we interpret the Torah the way we see fit. And the Torah describes that when the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur brings in the incense, so it says, Ki ve'anan ere al ha-kaporet. I am seen over the kaporet in the Holy of Holies with a cloud. What did the Sadducees say? Put the incense on the coals and then have the cloud of smoke be present as you walk into the Holy of Holies. Our tradition is that it doesn't have to mean that. And the way we would do it is, the Kohen Gadol would walk in, put down the pan with coals, and then pour out the incense on the coals. So the rabbis, they never knew if a Kohen was on our side or not. Many Kohanim were tzedukim. They never knew where the Kohen stood. So I don't know if many Kohanim were tzedukim. Archaeologists suspect that many Kohanim were tzedukim.
Does the math and it says every Kohen Gadol died every year?
It doesn't say they were tzedukim, it says they weren't worthy.
Alright, okay.
On the contrary, there's a Tosefta that's mashma that they didn't do it like tzedukim most of the time. So they would interview the Kohen Gadol a week before he would start doing the process, and then as the day came, they would take him a day beforehand into a special room. And they tell him, we are messengers of the court of the elders of Israel. Swear to us that you will do things the way we taught you. And he swears, and then he starts crying, and they start crying. He cries because they suspected him he was a tzeduki. They cry because they said we had to suspect him, and if you suspect someone wrongfully, then you get punished. Look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He thought he was being right in asking the question, prove to me or give me a sign so that the Jews will believe me. And he ended up suffering to the point of dying. And we just had to suspect the Kohen Gadol that maybe he was a Sadducee. So that's one example. Second example, it says that when Chana, you guys remember Chana? Who was Chana?
She was the wife of the mother of Shmuel, the wife of Elkanah.
Very good. So in this week's parasha, we will learn about a huge Talmid Chacham named Shmuel, a fantastic prophet who will anoint our first king and our second king, Shaul and David. So Shmuel, this amazing prophet, when his mother is praying that she should get pregnant, so in comes the Kohen Gadol and says, why are you walking into the temple drunk? He sees her lips moving, he thinks she's drunk. So what does she say? She says, bad move. You suspected me of something. I am kosher. I did nothing wrong. In other words, when a person suspects someone of something when they're really clean, they're going to get punished. But he didn't do it in his mind. He spoke to her. He said to her.
Even in your mind?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Every example is where a person verbalized it, not just in their thought. He said to her, Ad matai tishtakarin. Till when would you walk into here drunk? And what happens ultimately? He blesses her. So from here the Gemara says, if someone makes this mistake and they suspect someone wrongfully, so they have to give them a blessing. So my kids do this in a funny way. They'll sometimes suspect me of something, and I'll say, I didn't do that. Like the kid will say, Abba, why didn't you give me a... And I'll say, I did. It's right there on your plate. Oh! I say, no, you owe me a bracha. Choshed b'ksharim chayav, right? He says, you have to give a bracha. So they say, oh, you should, Abba, I wish you that you should give your children a lot of sweets. So they give me a bracha, that's in their favor, right? But the Gemara says, Achoshed b'ksharim, a person has to be careful, because even Moshe Rabbeinu got punished over it. We see the elders whose job it was to suspect the Kohen Gadol were concerned for this Gemara. And we see that from Elif that you have to bless a person if you mistakenly suspected them wrongfully. Okay, yes, Benny.
A couple things. Was that the Nun that... Because we also mentioned that Yoshua ben Nun... Nun was not necessarily his father, it was that he was followed by a fish.
Right.
I'm guessing Nun was a common name.
It seems that way. Seems that
way. Not conflicting that Nun there was the father of Yoshua.
Some want to say it is.
And another thing, with regards to Lashon Hara, speaking Lashon Hara to God, I don't know how much, because I would have thought about, right, the Chofetz Chaim usually talks about that it makes people think bad of the person, and that's what is so bad. So you also see this with Yeshayahu, where he says, "Am tamei spatayim," and he also gets punished. But where he wasn't publicizing it to everybody, so nobody heard him say, "Am tamei spatayim."
But he says it to Hashem. He doesn't just think
like,
it.
Just like Moshe here says...
says to Hashem. And you see, that's bad enough.
That's bad. That's called Lashon Hara?
You thinking badly is bad enough.
Saying, I don't know about thinking.
It doesn't affect anybody.
You say that loud to God.
But speaking to Hashem does affect.
It's not like where he says, like, Azvut Rebetta.
I don't know. It's pointing out the faults of the Jewish people before Hashem, which is not what a person should do.
And that's called Lashon Hara?
Could be because it affects you as well.
Because I'm saying he called him like a nachash.
Rashi says, "Tafasta umanuto shel nachash." Does it literally mean lashon hara? I don't know. Over here, the Gemara calls it choshed. I don't know if that's so. That's why I explained, according to the Marsha, that in this case he was told, "You're coming with the sign, and they'll believe you." B'shameu
v'kodecha. When it says ma'amin ve'ma'amin, is that talking about his? In the story of Pesel Micha, who was Moshe's grandson, great grandson, that did not believe. Is that not referencing that too?
I'm not aware of that. What it says in the Gemara is Atayin Sofcha Laamin Shneimar Yan Lo Emantem Bi. That's what it says. So I don't know of that. Okay, so we'll pick up here with Hashem next week.